If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Inside the Episode 1865. It is so good to be back with you. This is Rob McCollum, one of the producers of 1865. Joining me as always, Stephen Walters and Eric Archilla, our creative team. Guys, it's been so long. Welcome back.
Hey, did anything weird happen while we were gone?
I think there was some news stuff. I was checking in on a lot of other podcasts, so I kind of missed a lot of it.
I blacked out. I have no idea what happened.
It was good to see your face today.
Yes.
Yes, it's the first time in a very long time that we have all seen each other in person, even though we are recording still remotely in separate booths right now. We had hoped to bring you at least a portion of this season earlier in last year, and then with COVID that became untenable and impossible, but now we are back and recording, and I just wanted to thank everybody who has listened and made this show quite the phenomenon. Eric, what are we up to now?
We're up to 3.5 million downloads and counting, and that's pretty remarkable for a show that only has 16 episodes. So it's pretty awesome.
That's great. And well, I just want to say that, you know, we make this show for the listeners. When we first made it, we didn't even know if we would have any listeners. So it's really, really cool to know that we do. So thank you to everybody who listened to the show. And we hope you enjoy season two, the story of Ulysses S. Grant.
Yeah, that's actually a good segue for us, Steve, because with season one, we had no idea that this was going to get any kind of a public reaction. We had no idea if we were going to make a season two. So we made some choices in terms of how to structure and bottle that story so that it very much was the Stanton arc all the way through the impeachment. Now, when you guys were faced with the topic of how to move this story forward and where it was going to go from there, how did you approach where you wanted to start and move into season two?
Well, yeah, I mean, you touched on it, Rob, but, you know, in Eric and I's early conversations about what we wanted to do, it was obvious that we wanted to tell the larger story of Reconstruction, and General Grant seemed like the best character for that. But we did feel like it was important for our listeners, for our folks to know a little bit more about who Grant was as a political figure in Washington, after the Civil War, and what his relationship was to Edwin Stanton, but also to Johnson's impeachment. And we felt that the best way to do that was to flash back.
Yeah. So before we could approach season two, we basically had to untie this knot that we had made. Originally, we thought we were closing the door on the story, and we had to finish out the arc of Edwin Stanton in a satisfying way for the audience. And now that we're making a season two, we had to find a way to untie that knot. That was a big challenge that we had. We had to set up the story that we were going to tell for season two. So Steve came up with this really incredible way to approach new ground through this flashback idea with Charles Dickens.
You know, I think it's probably interesting for the audience, this cold open, right? This scene between, you know, Stanton and Charles Dickens and what that's all about. I can tell you that, you know, when I stumbled upon that information, I was just, my mind was blown. I couldn't believe that in the middle of this impeachment kerfuffle that Edwin Stanton actually sat down and had dinner with Charles Dickens. And when I read Dickens' account of it, how Dickens described Stanton as being a super fan, essentially somebody that knew his own work better than he did and could quote it all from memory, I was just like, when I heard this, we had already written season one. And I was like, oh, I hope I have the opportunity to use it. Well, what I stumbled across is that when that event took place in the timeline was right in the middle of General Grant's story as it relates to the impeachment. I don't want to give too much away, but you'll see this play out over the next few episodes before we get into Grant's presidency. But it happens at a very, very interesting moment in the timeline.
And Eric, you guys didn't stumble upon this factoid until we'd already finished season one, right? Or we're in the midst of it.
Yeah, Steve read Walter Starr's book that mentioned Dickens. But I was going to say, obviously, Grant is very important to the story of what's happening. And we skip a large portion of history in the first season because we had to have that conversation. Is Grant going to be in this season or not? When we decided to focus mainly on Stanton's story, we pretty much skipped an entire section of the impeachment,
We tip our hats to it, though, Eric. We do. In season one, Lorenzo Thomas, when he's first offered the job by Andrew Johnson, he says, "Well, you already offered it to Grant. He turned you down." That's a very, very sort of distilled description of what happened. General Grant actually played a central role in that, but we didn't have the time to cover it. And what's great about these first few episodes is that they almost serve as something of a preamble or a prologue. And that's really the way I think of them. Episodes 1, 2, and 3 are the prologue of Grant's story.
Yeah, so it really worked out well to kind of bottle up all of Grant and how he is relevant to the story to now when we're beginning to introduce Grant and who Grant is. And Dickens really opened the door to be able to go back and tell that story in a really, really cool way.
Well, I also love that we get to spend a little more time with the impeachment. We, of course, led up to it and dealt with it and used that as part of our climax for the first season. But the country as a whole right now has spent a couple of years learning a whole lot more about impeachment than anyone probably knew prior to the last 2 years. So I love that this bit of flashback in these first three episodes allows us to kind of dive into the decisions to impeach, when to impeach, how to impeach, those kind of questions, because that, you know, that's such a timely issue in some of the recent history of the country.
That's been one of the really incredible things about working on the show is even we talked about it last season as we were writing and they were having to talk about Confederate statues and that our show was so relevant. And even since we finished season one, our show continues to be so incredibly relevant. And when Andrew Johnson is trending on Twitter, we know we've honed in on the right story.
Well, and I think that it's relevant because the nature of American politics is cyclical. You know, I mean, I think I jokingly said during the Inside the Episodes last season, it's like Battlestar Galactica. All of this has happened before and all of it will happen again. And that's true. And I think we're even going to see more of that play out in the parallels between President Grant and President Biden. There are some similarities because both of them were, you know, sort of social progressives of their time. Entering into a political environment where right on the heels of a populist president who was impeached in the middle of a national crisis. So there's going to be a lot of parallels baked into the sort of American system.
And the idea that he's expressing the desire for unity is something we're going to hear a lot more about. Also, just because Eric mentioned it, if you're not following Andrew Johnson, Real Andrew Johnson, on Twitter and social media, I suggest it highly. Stanton and Andrew Johnson have Twitter pages that we think are rather entertaining.
I think that they're great. I think, Rob, it's probably also worth talking about that Grant, although we're talking a lot about him in this Inside the Episode, he has not yet appeared in the story. Grant is looms large over Reconstruction, both in the pages of history and in our story. And we're kind of dangling that carrot a little bit. And I just want to tell the listeners, a spoiler alert, we will get to meet him very, very soon.
One of the people we do get to meet in this episode is Charles Dickens. I love these restaurant scenes. I think it's so charming. You know, your consideration of what this actual conversation that we know really did happen, your imagining of what it was. And I love the actor who's been cast as Charles Dickens. His name is David Charles, and he is a an established theater actor in London, Radha trained and does an amazing job. And he really enjoyed this, got in and took some real time with this character. And I think they're really charming scenes. So I'm happy that we're getting to share them with folks now.
Thanks. It's just one of those historical facts that's just, it's, you couldn't make it up. I mean, why would you, right? it's one of those, it's one of those strange things from the pages of history that just sort of jumped out when I first saw it. And like I said, it really does sort of bring the flashback story together, and I think a really cool way that you'll see unfold over the next three episodes.
So one of the other new characters we meet after the, you know, kind of the framing device of the conversation with Dickens, we're back into the, you know, the machinations of Congress and the kind of warring factions. And that's where we get to hear from Cooper. Cooper, who is played by Blake Hackler, a brilliant Dallas stage actor and Yale trained. But Cooper is a really interesting character, and we're going to hear more from him. Tell me about Cooper.
Yeah, so Cooper was one of Andrew Johnson's top aides and lieutenants, and was really, I think, a sort of de facto aide-de-camp throughout the impeachment proceeding. He ultimately rises to a prominent position in the Johnson administration and is pretty integral to Johnson's journey. They're old-time friends. They're both from Tennessee. They share a friendship. They share an ideology. They are both what I would describe as modern-day terms, bigots. They both are proponents of states' rights, proponents of ending Reconstruction, of pardoning the South, and of delivering on the promises that have been made. And we're sort of getting into some complicated territory with Cooper in that we are making reference to some accusations against Andrew Johnson, some of which we can't know whether they're true or not true. You know, the extent to which Johnson perhaps engaged in bribery, exchanged, pardons for favors and political favors. We can't really know the full extent of that. That's one of the things that one of the many things that Congress was investigating Johnson for.
One of those relevant things that we talk about when we talk about the modern impeachment we just dealt with was the conversation of, you know, if you are going to impeach the president, how do you go about it? And that's one of the things we'll get into, like, what proof do they have? The other thing that is really important about Cooper is that it's laying the track for, not only did Johnson leave us in terrible conditions in this country in race relations, but also he opened the door supposedly to a lot of corruption,
which will be a huge factor in the story of season two as it continues to play itself out. I think it's interesting that one of the things that Johnson was impeached for were his words. He made some pretty inflammatory statements about Congress, and those statements got him in a lot of trouble. And, you know, it caused it, you know, after, you know, Stanton says in the cold open that, you know, the story really begins with the Civil Rights Bill of 1866. And, you know, in response to this, you know, massive social progress that's happening, that the Reconstruction Congress is pushing, you know, Johnson wields his veto power like a shotgun. Congress overrides him. And then you have this sort of constitutional crisis where the president is not really enforcing the laws of Congress. And at the center of all of that is the fate of the freedmen. But it's Johnson's words that first get him in trouble. I think he actually suggests dismantling the Congress, the 39th Congress, calls them an illegitimate body because they did not let the Southern governments be seceded, because, of course, the South was still under military occupation. So it's a very, very messy time historically and politically, very complex. And Johnson was uniquely ill-equipped and ill-suited to the task at hand.
Yeah, I called them usurper and dictator. And on his Swing Around the Circle tour, he said some pretty inflammatory things about Congress, calling for the hanging of Thad Stevens.
Yeah, yeah, and basically saying that the 14th Amendment, which, you know, the guaranteed citizenship, was illegitimate as well because the South did not participate in it.
Well, you mentioned Thaddeus Stevens, Eric. That's another character that we get to hear a little bit here. One of the, you know, great fighters for the cause. Now at kind of the end of his run, we hear him, and it's even mentioned in this episode that he suspects he only has a year or so to live, and he's gearing up for his last fight. And Stanton is, as he is wont to do, always urging people to take a bigger role than they are comfortable making. And he is coming down on the side of caution.
Yeah, and Thad Stevens was the father of the radical Republican faction, and was a true believer in the cause and put his beliefs into action. He was actively involved in the Underground Railroad and Black liberation, and he really put his words into action. He's played by one of my favorite actors, John Tyson, who is a longtime acting company member at the Alley Theater in Houston. We actually did a play together, a historical drama about LBJ called All the Way. That's where I first met John, and he's a fantastic actor. He's retired now, and so he came out of retirement to give us his gifts. My favorite part about his acting, and I think you hear it in his voice, is that he has a tremendous amount of vulnerability, but also gravitas at the same time. His portrayal of Thad is lovely, and you know, in our version of Thaddeus, you know, he is aware of the fact that his, you know, I believe he says, "My sands are nearly run." He says that in the series at some point, maybe episode one. What he's referring to is that he knows he's going to die, and he's palpably aware that this might be his last act. And because the stakes are so high and the freedmen hang in the balance, he wants to get it right. He wants to win. And that's what unites him with Edwin Stanton. He doesn't always agree with Stanton's methodology, but they share a common purpose.
One of the things that they are very concerned about, and Eric mentioned it, this swing around the circle, in that Andrew Johnson is going around the country actively campaigning, which was unheard of at that time. It was who could believe that a president would actively campaign for his reelection? That's so beneath the office at this time in history.
Yeah, this is where Grant first gets drawn into the story. This is true. You know, basically Johnson uses Grant like a political prop. He, you know, Grant is the general in chief at that time. And Johnson, you know, takes him on tour with him and parades him around. And Grant is forced to deliver these speeches. We chose to keep Grant out of the story at this moment because we first wanted to set up that Grant is really in this story. He's going to be caught between a hammer and an anvil. The hammer is Edwin Stanton. The anvil is Andrew Johnson. And this is the beginnings of that, the Swing Around the Circle tour. You know, Grant was horrified at the Swing Around the Circle tour. He wrote to his wife, Julia, this is a quote, "I have never been so tired of anything before as I have been with the political stump speeches of Mr. Johnson. I look upon them as a national disgrace." And that tells you a lot about, you know, who General Grant was as a man and as a political figure, but it also tells you a lot about how you felt about Andrew Johnson.
Well, and Stanton wants to capitalize on that. Stanton is trying to bring Grant into the fold. Of course, Grant wants nothing to do with politics, as we hear from several of the other characters talking. So that also lets us meet another character that Stanton goes to in an effort to try to woo Grant, and that is Ely Parker, Grant's aide-de-camp. Tell me about Ely Parker, another real character from history.
So, you know, Ely is a chief, a member of the Six Tribes. He, you know, is one of Grant's top aides, most trusted advisors, and most loyal friends.
Yeah, so Ely Parker was actually at Appomattox and helped to draft the surrender terms, and one of Grant's closest friends and advisors. And when Lee walked in and he was shaking hands with all of the Union leadership, he refused to shake Ely Parker's hand because he thought he was a mulatto. And then when he found out that he was a Native American, he actually shook his hand and said, "I'm glad to see that there's at least one real American here," to which Ely Parker very graciously responded, "I think we're all real Americans here."
Yeah, we are all Americans here, General, which I think is a little too gracious, more gracious than I would have been, certainly. But Ely has a big role to play in this story. We won't get to it to the meat of it until much, much later. But, you know, he rises to a position of prominence in the Grant administration. He becomes the head of the Indian Affairs Bureau, which is a massive government agency inside the Department of the Interior. And he's an interesting historical figure because he's a man caught in two worlds. You know, I mean, he is a chief of his people. He's also a colonel in the military and a high ranking government official at one point. You know, he wants peace. That's what he desires, peace for both of his countries. He understood that, you know, the Indian tribes needed protection from the white settlers just as much, if not more, than vice versa. And so Ely sought to, him and Grant both sought to pursue policies that established peace, to try to to, you know, get the tribes onto reservations, which is a messy, problematic issue because there are nomadic people, and forcing them onto stationary reservations put them in an untenable position where they could not survive. So Ely's got a big road to haul ahead of him in this journey.
Well, and it also just underscores the idea that it's not just the freedmen who are in danger, but also the Native American population in the United States is also hanging in the balance.
Yes, and we're going to have massive westward expansion continuing all the way through the 1860s, and the railroads being constructed, and you know the face of the country is changing, and sadly the Native American tribes are left out and driven out violently.
So Stanton's got to get Grant on his side, and so he uses Ely Parker to do that. And I want to read from this letter that Stanton wrote to Congressman Ashley. He said, "There is indeed danger ahead, the most serious thing being that Johnson and Grant, as you put it, quote, suck from the same quill, quote. The president has for more than a year put forth persistent effort to capture Grant for purposes that are unmistakable. He has in a measure succeeded, but I firmly believe that the head of the armies cannot ultimately be corrupted." So Stanton believed that Grant in his true hearts was on the right side and was going to try to pull him over to the right side of history.
But I think what I think was important about this episode, and the reason we wanted to keep Grant out of it and not hear his voice in it, is because it was just as important, I think, for our listeners to understand what our characters had to say about him before he became a character. Because I think what a lot of people think who know about General Grant think is, well, he's a Republican. You know, it was Lincoln, and then there was maybe this other guy that we don't know too much about, Johnson, and then this other Republican, this General Grant, the hero of Appomattox. But Grant was not a political creature. He was not a tried and true Republican. He was certainly at this time of the story of history not a radical Republican or anything close to it, and never really was. And in fact, he had only voted in one presidential election, and that was for James Buchanan. So he was, in the eyes of a lot of Washington, a Democrat. And so there was this real question about where he was going to land politically. And that's why I said earlier, the hammer and the anvil, Grant's going to find himself in between a rock and a hard place.
And it also just underscores how big a hill Stanton has to climb, which is set right at the end of the episode. His goal is to try to somehow figure out how to get Grant to run against Johnson in the upcoming presidential election. So lots of runway has been laid for us with these first episodes as we're moving out of the prologue and into the meat of season two. I'm really happy with these prologue episodes, and I hope you all have enjoyed being back into the swing of 1865.
Yeah, thank you for following us through season one and jumping into season two with us. We're so lucky to have all of you listening.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Rob.
All right, Eric and Steve, as always, thank you for being here. Thank all of you for listening. Tune in to episode two of our prologue episodes, and then check back in here with the inside the episode. And if you'd like to help us out and also get some additional goodies, please become a patron at patreon.com/1865podcast. Members get exclusive content, early access, ad-free listening, and lots more. We're always looking for more ways to give back to our Patreon community, so please become one yourself at patreon.com/1865podcast. Thank you for listening. 1865 is an Airship production. This episode was hosted by me, Rob McCollum, produced by Eric Archilla, theme music by Lindsey Graham. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Inside the Episode, 1865.